Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Red Ben TV. It is the main podcast. I am joined this week by Tom, by Errol and by Jack. And we've got loads to talk about this week and I'm excited. It's been a while since I've done one of these podcasts. So we're going to get straight into it with our warm-up question. Callum Buck asks, you have to start for Liverpool in the Champions League final and play the full 90 minutes with your real-life football ability. However, you're allowed to change one rule of the game to give yourself an advantage over the pros and level the playing field. What is your rule, Jack Gill?
My rule would be that every player on the opposition can't touch the ball with any part of their body. That's what I'd bring in.
How would they then, would they have to use you as like a battering ram of sorts? So you're then like the golf club and you're just getting battered around the field?
I haven't worked that out. I've just worked out that that would make me the best player on the pitch. So that it's a no-brainer.
You'd probably be the 11th best player on the pitch there, Jack.
So
what's the rule change? Because the opposite, there's no rules for one team or another, is there? It's a rule for everybody. True. So while you work out your rule change, you want me to move on to Errol?
Yeah.
Errol, what's your rule change, mate?
So, I've kind of got the whole scenario in my head played out right now. So it's 90 minutes in a Champions League final. If it's on my current ability, I'm placing myself, I'm not in this position normally or in any way, shape or form, but I'm placing myself next to Virgil van Dijk in centre defence. Because okay, if Virg talks me through 90 minutes of the game, we're bagging us the 7th Champions League as far as I'm concerned. So this is how it runs out. The opposition, if the rules have got to change for everybody, the people that are shooting can only shoot with their weak foot. So provided the competition up front, their target man, whoever can only shoot with his weak foot, I reckon I've still got a good chance of seeing him off with my current ability.
What does that do to Mo Salah, though?
It depends, to be honest. It might not make a big difference to him.
Have you seen him kick a ball with his right foot, Errol?
Well, he slices them more often than he gets them on target, but that's not the point. We've still got Mane, we've still got other players that can hit them with the head and stuff like that. So, as far as I could say, I think that's a good leveller.
If we're playing against, let's just say Chelsea, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they still have strikers who can score with the heads and the weak foot.
Oh yeah, they do. But I'm just saying, if you've got, it's a team game, so it's a 90-minute thing. So I'm hoping that collectively the Liverpool players are still on job. If they're still on job and I'm next to Virgil van Dijk, he's going to talk me through a lot of the things that are going to happen. I'm hoping that there's not that many chances that the other team get to breach our back line and get a shot in on target. In the event that they do, though, you've got to take it with the weak foot, and I'm backing myself.
Okay.
I'd love to see you go up against a fucking a professional footballer with the speed of Mo Salah, and you think that him playing it, shooting just with his left foot is going to do it. Like, you know what I mean? His weak foot. I mean, the fact of the matter is they're going to rinse you, lad. They're going to kick it over the top.
He probably will rinse me on more than one occasion in the match, but getting the chance to score and getting a pass that back line, I don't think that's happening anytime soon, especially if Virgil van Dijk is talking me through the whole game. That's what I'm leaning on in a lot of this.
Tom, what are you going for, mate?
No physical contact at all.
So just fucking project restart.
Well, pretty much. But like, I'm talking, they can't touch you on the arm. You know what okay. I mean? So I'm going to be centre forward. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not playing centre half with them rules. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bait them into touching me on the arm and get loads of penalties. And then we'll win. It's just going to be penalty. You don't get a card, by the way, if you touch someone. So it's just a foul, no card. Because that would be stupid, you know what I mean? That just ruins the rule. And but if any physical contact whatsoever, and yes, that could hamper us at the back. But you know what I mean? If I have to play, there's no way that if physical contact's allowed, I'm just gonna get thrown on the floor every single time, no matter what I do, no matter what position. So yeah, I figure just bait people into giving me penalties.
Okay, Jack, have you figured yours out yet, mate?
Yeah, it's either. Get rid of the offside rule and just stand up front and get them to punt the ball up to me and nice. I favour myself.
But they can use that against us as well, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. So if it would be that, then I'd play in my natural position of left back because I'm usually the worst player on the pitch. And I'd,
are you doing a modern fullback or are you an old school fullback?
I'm a new breed of fullback. Really, I just like to run a lot. I can pass the ball all right, and I like to run. So there you go. But maybe a netball sort of rule where you can only take three steps or something with the ball at your feet, and therefore it's difficult for an attacker to beat me.
That one might be all right for me, you know, because that would stop me running for 90 minutes. I think I'm going to change the rule of how to score a goal for me. So. For everybody else, the ball has to cross the line. For me, I just have to complete a pass. and then I'm thinking, I'm going to gather a lot of attention here. So, you know, there'll probably be like 11 players around me. But because I've just changed the rule for me, they can't do that because otherwise there'd be 11 players around me. I'd be stood by the like halfway line and then my team would go and score.
Yeah. Would they have a player that only got goals from passing though? Because...
No, because I was specific with my rule change.
So your rule change just affects you specifically, yeah? Doesn't affect anybody else playing in the Champions League final that game?
Okay, my rule change is that my team starts with 100-0. That's my rule change right there.
Is there anything, I haven't thought about this, is there any way you could get through a game, a Champions League final for Liverpool?
No,
on adrenaline, if you actually was in that situation, yeah, I reckon the majority of fans and like if you was fit enough, you'd probably get through it. In terms of how you'd perform, I couldn't really say it would be, you know, stellar or you know, A1 material. It'll probably just be a run out and a jog for a lot of it.
I always think no way. But then I remember that Jermaine Pennant has played in the Champions League final for Liverpool, and that gives me a bit of confidence that I probably could.
Lost though, didn't
he? He did lose.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, you know when, like, people in the pub berate someone for that poor first touch? Like, you will get slated. Think about, like, your first touch, you think it's decent, and then you play against professional footballers, and you realise your first touch is not decent. It's a pass to the opposition every single time. That's what I mean. Like you've been through this, Chris, you know, and that wasn't even the Champions League final.
It wasn't the Champions League final. I wasn't playing with pros. I was playing with ex-pros, and they still just ignored me for the rest of the game. They passed the ball to me once.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was it. I miscontrolled it.
Yeah.
What?
What happened with that pass, Chris?
It went to the other team. It went about 7 yards away. I tried to control it. I miscontrolled it badly. It went about 7 yards away straight to the other player. And then I got ignored for 15 minutes. And this isn't by professionals. This is by John Aldridge and like fucking Jan Mulby, who were 20 years out of the game, who just ignored me. So I don't think the rule really matters to us. Because if you just get ignored. Because Liverpool would just play with 10 men.
But that's what I think. That's not the bad thing, though. If you stood in defence next to Virgil van Dijk, you're playing at Liverpool's pace. I can't see you having to exert that much energy with him as your centre-back partner. I reckon he's going to do all the mopping up, and every now and again he's going to say, Edel, stand there and don't move. And I'm just going to go, yes, boss.
I just wouldn't want to get in the way defensively. Yeah, that's what you know what I mean? I just stand really high and wide on the left.
As a centre-half?
No, not as a centre-half. As like a left winger. Or you know, say we're playing two up top. I'd be one of them. So we're really playing one up top.
One up top, yeah. Well, we'd probably all be in that category, really, based on ability. That's where we do the least damage for the squad.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, it is interesting. Anyway, listen, we've got no sponsor this week, so I just wanted to give a shout out to Errol's podcast. Errol, where can they check out your new podcast, mate?
Oh, nice one. Yeah, guys, we've got the group chat podcast. It's on Go Play Studios YouTube channel. So if you do get a chance to go and watch it, it's about covers a few Liverpool things, not Liverpool Football Club, but Liverpool as a city. Culturally, we had Camel Fat on earlier in the year. We've had some comedians join us on the podcast. We've had some restaurant owners and stuff like that. We just kind of talk some stuff and you just hash it out and have some good vibes. So nice one for the plug.
No problem. Oh, you did it yourself. We'll move into the topics then. This is it. This is the section where we each get to bring one topic of our choosing. So we're going to start with Tom's because it's a little bit, well, it's sporty and it's relevant. And Tom, why don't you ask everybody what you want to talk about or tell everyone what you want to talk about?
Well, I've been watching the Last Dance, which is obviously on the Bulls and Michael Jordan and all the players involved in that. And it's kind of their journey, isn't it, of their success going from the start when all these players aren't there, Michael Jordan getting drafted in. And then, I mean, I haven't seen the end, so I don't know what the end is. But I'm assuming the hit greatness or whatever. But I wanna just ask you, like, not even ask you, I just want to speak about how this Klopp era is going to have one of them, I believe, because it is a story. It's thinking about, I don't know when it'd start, maybe it'd be the end of Rodgers in 1914, and then the building through of how, like, the captainship changed from Gerrard to Henderson and stuff. But then it's the way that we've lost so many finals and we've built our way through, and then these massive games, the Man City games, and losing the title by one, and then having all this coronavirus stuff now, and then next season, what's that going to be? I can't wait to see this for Liverpool, because there's, like I say, the story's already there and it's only going to get better. And I was just thinking who the focal point's going to be, and would it be Klopp himself and his tactics now he's changed everything? Could it be Henderson? Is there a man that you think embodies this team? It could even just be like Mo Salah and all that kind of thing. I just think it's going to be a really interesting documentary, and whoever gets the rights to it all is going to make some serious money.
Want to tackle that?
Yeah, I've watched the whole Last Dance. I finished it last night myself. I think it's a belter. I remember watching the first couple of episodes and being on the podcast. I think I might have mentioned I thought there were similarities in the coach from the Bulls that got them the success. The first half of it covers the first three championships that they won back-to-back in 91, 92, 93. And just some of the conversations, and it was about the group being together. And when this coach came in, effectively what he did was, instead of the plays all being ran through Michael Jordan, he had like a three-point system where players would be positioned in these strategic places across the court to maximise how many points people could potentially get through a game. And it didn't matter who was in that system. It opened basically, no matter where you were standing, it opened it up for the plays that you could basically go and make yourselves. And with that, it was just all those little conversations about like the team togetherness. That season when that play was implemented, they went and got more points and they went and got more wins and stuff. And it's great to see like there are similarities between the way like Klopp's messages across to the players has resonated, and the players are saying the same sort of things about like it is about team togetherness, it's about the unit, it's about bringing us all up in a gear and to the next level and stuff. And I think in terms of a focal point potentially, I think Trent, in terms of what he could potentially mean in stature, in terms of the sport in a couple of years' time, and the city could potentially, especially being the what is it? It's the beginning of his career as well, almost as well, in that sense. So I think that would be a great focal point, especially from the Nike sponsor as well, when that comes into play and all those things that could unfold, because obviously Jordan got the link with Nike, but him personally wanted to be with Adidas. So that legacy has been born out of the business with the Chicago Bulls, and all the cultural things as well for me, you know, just being obviously like the time in America, like sneakers and stuff like that, say it wasn't really a big cultural thing. Michael Jordan came and made it that. I'm just excited to see all the little throw-offs of this Liverpool team and what little things are going to kind of bleed out into our communities, into society, into the way we do things, just based on the influences that these players and this team have given us. So yeah, that's kind of my overview of it all.
Jack, have you been watching it, mate?
I haven't, to be honest. It's on my watch list. To be honest, during lockdown, I haven't. There's been so much rubbish I've done, but I've not really been willing to sit there and watch something for some reason. I have no idea why, but I've always been interested in basketball, and if I had to pick a team, it would always be the Bulls. I don't know why, but I've always liked them, and you know, I got into it in like sort of year 11 sort of stages at school, and they would be the team that I watched when they had sort of like Derrick Rose and all that then. So, you know, I think it's interesting. It's definitely worth watching. But to go to Tom's question, I'd say it's difficult. It's very difficult because there's so many players in this current team who it could be about. I think Errol's picked a good one there in Trent. But, you know, it could be Sadio Mane because he was the first real signing in the Klopp where it's created what we've got now. It was the first real marquee signing that the Klopp made. And at the time, everyone was a bit like, oh, 30 million for Sadio Mane. What's that about? And you look at the player he's become. It could be about Jordan Henderson. You know, a lot of people don't mention. I think he was very underrated in the 13-14 campaign, and a lot of people obviously talk about the Gerrard slip being what cost us the title or Chris Dan Ball, but actually I think Jordan Henderson getting sent off against Man City was a big part in that as well. And, you know, I think how he's obviously come through, he's under the Klopp, in the Klopp era, a lot of people have questioned his captaincy. When Van Dijk came in, some people thought he should be given the captain's armband, but no one can argue he's turned it around. And, you know, he might win PFA Player of the Year this season. He lifted the Champions League at the end of last season. He's going to lift the Premier League at the end of this season. It's just been a remarkable few years for Jordan Henderson, and I think it's going to get better for the lad as well. And as I say, the Sadio Mane, it could be on Mo Salah, it could be on Bobby Firmino, and obviously how he is the system that Klopp's built all this around at times. But it could be absolutely anyone. It could be Robertson, how he's rose through, Virgil van Dijk getting in the top three for the Ballon d'Or, and you know he's the best defender in the world right now, and one of the best players in the world. So there's so many players that you could focus this on, so why not give them each an episode each?
Yeah, I must admit, I personally think there's probably only one person that this could be about at the moment, and I think that's Mo Salah. I get what Jack's saying, don't get me wrong, and you know I don't disagree, but when you're trying to draw a comparison to Michael Jordan, I don't think there's anybody close other than Mo Salah. I think what he has to go through for his religion and for everybody in Africa and Egypt and everything else, and the way that he's adored like that, I don't see that there's anybody else like that. I think, you know, a lot of the players, Bobby Firmino isn't really thought of like that in Brazil. You know, Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't there yet. And most of those players are real, like, known to be Liverpool players. So for me, if they're going to make a documentary like the Jordan documentary, it has to be about someone who's a cultural icon. And then in that case, it's Mo Salah. But where I agree with the lads is I wouldn't have it as a last dance. I'd have it as a America's game. If you've seen the Super Bowl champions one, they do year by year, where they speak to three or four people from each season. So it might be Jürgen Klopp, it might be Jordan Henderson, it might be Virgil van Dijk one season. And then if you win the Premier League again, hopefully if we win it the first time, then you've got next season, it's your Andy Robbo, your Trent Alexander-Arnold, maybe it's your Pep Linders or someone else with a really interesting story, and do it sort of like that. But what I suspect will happen, Tom, is that none of this will get made because Klopp doesn't want it to get made. Yeah. And what we'll see is more like, if anyone's read the book Belichick, now, if you've read that book, Belichick had nothing to do with the book, and it was written as an actual biography. And they went back through, and they went back and spoke to people who went to school with him, who lived on the army bases that he lived on with his dad as he grew up, who worked for him in the past. And Belichick was ended up paying people to not be on the book, and yet there's always someone who will come up and say something. That's what I think will be written about this Liverpool side, because Jürgen won't want it. I don't know where you sit on it all, mate.
Well, I think it could just be Jürgen Klopp himself could be the focal point, because there's so many players that are coming and going, and towards the end, like, we might see another iteration of this Liverpool side that he's had to go through, you know what I mean? We just don't know where the story's going to end up. But it is funny because I'm watching it now and I'm thinking all these different people, like, they're getting filmed 24/7, and like we're just starting to get that with LFC TV and getting all these different camera angles. And you know for a fact they have a whole bank of footage that they've never shown us that they're going to save for the right time. I can't wait for all that footage to come out. But yeah, I think it is going to be on Jurgen Klopp. And then I do feel like it'll be Jordan Henderson for me, just purely because it's the way that he's the captain's armband, like I speak about. He's kind of drove through all of the years, and he's become a better player because of that. And he's never been the best player, and I think that kind of adds to it a little bit, because you're thinking, wow, this man's just kind of with his pure work ethic, and that's something that Michael Jordan had in spades. I've been watching. I didn't know too much about the Bulls and Michael Jordan at the time either, before I started watching it 2 days ago. But yeah, I just can't wait for the story of Liverpool to be told, really, in a video form.
The reason I said Cent was just because of the time and of it all, more than anything else. Obviously, Jordan was in his prime, you know, winning rings and championships in 91. Now, I know at least three of us, or at least two of us, were only here in 91, me included. So, from that being said, it took us nearly 28 years to get this footage and to get this story told in the way it is. Personally, I think if you was to give it another 20 years, Trent could be of that type of stature where he does have the sponsorship deals. He does have that cult stature in terms of, you know, the city as well as wider base UK, worldwide potentially. And I think as well, if he gets the success that unfortunately Gerrard was probably deprived of in a Liverpool shirt, I reckon he'll definitely have documentaries and similar stuff like that around him.
No, Trent's got an absolute shout at it if he carries on, isn't it? And, you know, he puts a few Premier League trophies on the side. But what were you going to say then, Jack?
Just a quick one, really. That for me, the reason I said all of them is because I don't think you can make a documentary about Jurgen Klopp without having the togetherness of this squad. And you know, yeah, it's not even just the squad, it's the staff as well. You could do one about, obviously, Linders and how Buvac went, there was a big meltdown. How are Liverpool going to cope without the brain? And then obviously we've got all this success afterwards. I think you can't talk about Klopp and this era at Liverpool without including everyone. And I think to focus on one certain individual would be wrong. And, you know, I think the thing is, even if you look at that Michael Jordan documentary, obviously it wasn't just Michael Jordan and there were so many bits and pieces to put into there. But Michael Jordan always seems to be the player that spoke about more than anyone else. He seems to be that key man. And I don't think we have a player that's like that. I think we have so many players that make this great squad and this great group of people that we have right now. That's why I think it'd be very difficult to focus on one person.
Yeah, I think, listen, I think there's elements of everybody's that, you know, I think we can all take away. I think, you know, everybody's right in a sense and there's no wrong answer here. But let's move on then. Jack, before we talk about Project Restart, which is my topic, Jack, you want to ask us all about our thoughts on the sort of ghost games and all that type of stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I saw your tweet the weekend, Chris, and for me, you literally summed it up perfectly on how the Bundesliga felt and how it felt a bit like a pre-season game, but when it's the Premier League, it's going to be like, I really want this and it's better than having nothing. Obviously, we know as Liverpool supporters how much of an effect us as supporters have on the squad at times. Some great moments and some great nights that have been created that include an incredible atmosphere. But for a long period of time, we're not going to have that. Probably until January, we're going to have games without fans. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are because I've been a lot over the weekend. And there's obviously people that are desperate for football back in any capacity and will take these ghost games. But I've also seen the other side of it and people saying, actually, I'm not that interested while it's like this.
Go on, Tom. Do you want to start on this one, mate?
Yeah, I fall on the other side of it in terms of I'm not a big fan of it. And look, I fully understand the people who want football back, and it's great to have it back and seeing the skills, and there were some fantastic goals this weekend, and it's nice to see that kind of thing again. But for me, football's always been about the passion side of it, and what, like, I don't really watch much football other than Liverpool too much, because for me, I love to get invested in the footy. You've all watched a game of footy with me, and you know that I like to shout at the screen, and that's me enjoying the football. Whenever I go to the game or sit in a pub, I wanna be involved, even though I'm not. I'm just shouting at a telly screen. But I couldn't get that sense of anything when I was watching the Bundesliga, and I did watch Bayer Leverkusen, who I've picked to be my team, and I did sort of get a bit more involved into it. But I just didn't care, and I don't know whether that's just me being jaded. Maybe I'm completely wrong in all this, and I understand that it's paving the way for Premier League football. I get that, and I'm really thankful that this is a starting point for it all to come back. But
don't apologise, Tom. If you fucking didn't like it, you didn't like it.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? It's just what happens, isn't it?
There's a lot of people who are going to be like, well, it's the way it is. It has to be like that, and I fully understand that. I just don't care. I really don't care about it. I want football back. I want Liverpool back because they're the ones that made it exciting. I'm watching Mo Salah and Sadio Mane running down the wings, and the way that we play football and the way that we defend resolutely, there's something special about that to me. And it's not just because they're my team. We're the best team in the world. No one can compare to that. I don't like watching any of the football that isn't the best now because I've been spoiled with it for like two seasons. I don't know.
It's fucking mad, though.
I think that's the thing. I think it's the fact that obviously you're not as interested as you are for Liverpool. So I think when Liverpool are back, everyone's going to be like, yeah, this is what I've been waiting for. And obviously for German fans probably who watch Bundesliga week in, week out, they probably love this weekend. But for us, it wasn't quite the same. It had that pre-season sort of feel to it. But it made me really excited for Liverpool to come back now. And you know, I think I'm not a fan of the ghost games. I'd much rather have the fans in the stadium. But it's better than the alternative of no football right now.
I think that's it, mate. And, you know, I'll come to you next, Errol, on this. But for me, I'm like, it was just a bit soulless, a bit lifeless. And I've seen people from both sides of the fence on Twitter over the weekend. And as what always happens, finger pointing goes on. And it's like, well, if you can't enjoy football, you don't really like football. And it's all that. It's like, yeah, but it's packaged up in a way that we're used to consuming. So I watch football with no sound on quite often when I'm watching the Premier League at night when I'm putting the kids to bed, but I care. You know, I think it's just down to the Bundesliga for me, and I don't really care. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's football, but it's also a league that I just don't really give a shit about anymore. You know, I've not watched Bundesliga in 4 or 5 years. I don't know any of the players. I've not really got the time to invest in my life to watching another league anyway, because I don't really have time to watch all of the Premier League games. It felt soulless. There was no weight to it. Tom put it perfectly in our WhatsApp group. You know, we were talking about it, and he was like, there's no... I said to them, like, this could be the Champions League final, and it wouldn't feel like a fucking Champions League final. It feels like a pre-season friendly because there's no crowds there. And Tom put it perfectly when he replied, there's just no weight to anything. You can't tell how important it is because there's no crowd there to tell you how important it is. You know, it's just lads kicking a football around, which is nice as a spectacle. But don't tell me that, like, just watching that with poor commentary against the fucking something else that I could be doing with my time, like 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon, I can think of better things to do. You know, I genuinely can think of better things to do.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And I don't hear like any side should apologise. We're all fucking Liverpool fans. We all love Liverpool football club. We all love footy. We wouldn't be here talking about it now. And then you've got people going, oh, well, you know, it's just crap because football without fans is nothing. And then you've got another side going, football's an art. And you can't appreciate the art of football. And it's like, wank yourselves off. Like, I like what I like and I can't help it if I don't like it. You know what I mean? I just can't help that. You feel how you feel. Do you want me to fake it? Why would I fake it? Like, you know what I mean? It's just mad. Please, Errol, tell me someone enjoyed it.
No. Well, do you know what? I enjoyed Haaland's goal. I stuck around to watch that, and then I'm not going to lie, I went out for a walk down Crosby Beach. But I did see Haaland's goal. I seen that celebration. He had that kind of cocky swagger about him, and there was all that social distancing going on. My thing is, I'm kind of, because we've got that Liverpool focus at the moment, objectively we're thinking, right, football returns for us means that within 2 games, we've then wrapped up the Premier League title. As fans now, as a fan base, we've got that thing that we've wanted and craved. Forget for the 30 years, let's just compartmentalise for this season. We've got it, this season's wrapped up now. There are another 7 games. Do we then feel like Bundesliga fans all over again? Because all of a sudden, as Tom was saying, the games don't have any weight. There's 7 games that for us practically now are pre-season games. So
Centurions, though.
Say that again?
Centurions. We want to be Centurions.
We want to be Centurions, yeah. No, absolutely. You're right.
And no one's going to accept Liverpool drawing or losing games just because they've come off the back of a pandemic. I mean, the FSG houses will go mad.
No, but what I'm saying is, in terms of just like having that extra level of feeling towards it, I don't know if for some people, casual fans maybe, once the league's wrapped up, that might be it then. For the rest of it, as you're saying, Tom, it doesn't have any weight and it feels a little bit soulless until the real fans are back within stadiums. But from my perspective, I think the fact that they've managed to get away back just shows the level of importance for the games. The leagues have taken it very serious to come back as at the earliest convenience, really. So hopefully when the Prem games are playing and, you know, you're watching Liverpool play, we've still got to play Everton. Watching those games, I don't care where you are in the world. I've watched games around the world sometimes. You're not in live with the, you know, with your home fans or anything like that, but you still feel that same buzz. So I just hope that they come back sooner rather than later, personally.
Do you think, obviously, we're going to be in for it looks like a long call, and we'll roll this into my topic, which is Project Restart. Mm. You know, the BBC have done a piece today, and, you know, they're saying, like, they're probably planning for 6 to 12 months of behind closed doors footy. Mm-hmm. I know we've had loads of time now. We've had 2 months, haven't we, to kind of get ourselves into that mindset. But, I mean, now that it's, like, looks like it's starting to come back, the thought of actually not being in the stand for 12 months is horrendous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think I've got to that point where I kind of realised that.
No, and it's not even just that. It's the act of going to the pub as well. You've lost all that. You've lost all the, I'll just go around to my mates and watch the game then instead. There's going to be none of that. Well, not at the moment anyway. Maybe when it comes back, because they're talking about 12th of June coming back. That's not happening. Maybe by the time it comes back, it'll all be a bit relaxed and you can start doing the 30 people bubble or whatever, and you can have that with your family and friends where you can go and watch the footy with them. That's what we need back. We need that kind of shared experience thing. I mean, everyone's done it once in a life where they've watched a big Liverpool game by themselves. And yes, you enjoy it because it's Liverpool and you get passionate about it, but it's not the same. It's not the same as being like, did you see that? And being able to talk to someone. And that's why a load of people are on social media and Twitter and are watching this and watch Redmen all the time, because they want that and they want that discussion in the comments and stuff like that. That's going to be the thing that's missing for me. And yeah, it is going to be mad. I mean,
I don't think necessarily it's going to be missing. I think it's going to be disjointed. Because I think people will still access those little pockets, as you say. The mainstay, in terms of what Chris said, in the stands, all right, that's off limits for potentially 12 months. But those other little bubbles with social media, certain outlets might just have to up the game in how they interact with fan bases, which I'd be quite excited to see, really, just see how much more interactive football can become. So the product is better when fans are able to go back into the grounds as well. I think that should be the way that they should be focusing on it. How can we make the overall fan experience better? Doesn't matter where you're experiencing the game from, with the end goal being the live fans, how can they now reappreciate the game? It might be things like safe standing as well, Chris, when you do reintroduce it, like have those things locked off so it can be implemented across the Premier League. There's so much scope that they could do with this. I just hope that they're not short-sighted and just kind of trying to tick boxes.
It is interesting. I mean, one of the things that I thought had become popular, because it became popular in basketball actually a few years ago, is these like VR seats almost. And, you know, you'd be able to buy a ringside seat virtually for like 50 quid or 20 quid or whatever the price was. And you get your floor seat, but you'd be on a computer. Now, what's to say you can't get one in the cop, one in the main stand, and one in this? Because it's just setting up four cameras and setting a stream up. You know what I mean? That might be something that people look to do to try and give you that sort of at least stadium feel. Because, you know, when you, has anyone done the tour in the cop in Anfield, and you go up and you get that virtual crowd?
Yeah.
Has anyone done that? Tom, have you done that, or Jack? Yeah. Maybe they could incorporate something like that. You know what I mean? Where, you know, you feel like you're in part of a crowd watching the game. Maybe that's what you do for season ticket holders. The telly crowd probably stays the same, or maybe you could sell some more virtual season tickets that way. I don't know, but I'm with Errol. I hope they do think of something a little bit outside the box. It might not work, and, you know,
it's trial and edit, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah.
It's trial and edit, like.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
The thing is, as well, it's going to make us appreciate it even more when football does come back. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen a European night at Anfield before all this. Can you imagine the first one back with fans? It's going to be unbelievable. And you know, I think when everyone is finally allowed back in stadiums, they're going to be bouncing more than ever before. You know, I think it's going to be incredible once it's back allowed again. But for now, I think we just have to learn to love the game as it is now. And that's the thing. We all love football. We've said we all love football how it is. And we've all been obviously saying for years that football without fans is nothing. And as we've seen from the weekend, it isn't the same. And hopefully clubs and leagues and everyone involved in football now understands what people have been saying for years, and the fact that football isn't the same without supporters there. And hopefully, as Errol says, it does change for the better when this is all gone. But for the time being, I think we do need to fall in love with this current football. And as we say, need to wait and see what happens and what changes they bring in to try and make it more like it is as we know. But I think it will be interesting, because I think for a while football's needed to adapt to the times a bit and has needed a bit of a change, and they can't stop the change now. The change will have to come.
What makes you say that, Jack? Why do you think it needed to change? Because I just wanted to go back and be the same. That's all I want. Like, it's quite an interesting viewpoint.
I think for a while, so looking at this as a new, I think from a Liverpool perspective, it's very easy to say that obviously we want back what was before. I think we were in the best place we've been in for a long time. But I think football as a whole, in terms of the money, looking at teams like Manchester City, looking at like what Newcastle are just about to go through, looking at obviously clubs in the EFL and how they're left behind, how we lost Bury this year and stuff like that. I just think things need to change. And there's looking at it now. I've seen stuff happen in the Football League over the last few days where a lot of teams are getting in difficult situations. Obviously, League Two has now had to cancel the season because there isn't as much money as there is there in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And they need more support from things like the EFL. And I see a lot of grassroots football. I'm a referee, so I see a lot of grassroots football, and that game isn't the same. There's a big bridge between different leagues. And, you know, I think it's very interesting, because I think it needs to be a bit more united. Football needs to be a bit more together.
Pyramid needs to stop looking at, you know, the people at the top need to stop looking after themselves and start looking after grassroots. So, yeah, that's fair enough. Like, you brought me on to an interesting question from one of our Redmen TV subscribers, Russell Waring. He actually texted me this and I forgot all about it and started talking. I thought this was brilliant, so I'll just add this in there now. And he texted me and said, have you seen anything regarding FFP and the impact it's had on keeping clubs afloat during COVID? I've not seen anything, but I feel like if FFP wasn't in place, there could already have been a few clubs going to the wall. FFP might have given some clubs a bit of time to ride this out. However, it might be too early to tell. What do you reckon? I don't see anyone talking about that.
No, you're right.
It's difficult. I think at this point nobody knows, and this is the thing. And obviously, people that watch Redmen Academy will know that Liam, who does the cameras for us, is a big Doncaster fan in League One. And I've been talking to him about it a lot, and I'm like, well, surely you'll get support off the leagues and stuff like that. And he's like, no, you won't get any support. You'll watch clubs going bust and things like clubs replacing managers with players maybe to support that. But they won't do anything about it until they start losing money off TV revenue maybe. And you know, I think it's going to be very interesting to see, because one thing that I always relate to at the minute is Bournemouth. Now, Bournemouth are a small Premier League club right now. They don't. I know, obviously, they seem to spend a lot of money on transfers and stuff like that, but they're relatively small and they're in a relegation battle right now. If they go down, that will have massive financial effects on that club, and that, partnered with everything going on at the minute, that's enough to probably sink Bournemouth right now. And you know, I think
they could have went down, though, had they have not secured the 40-odd points in the end of the 38 games, though. I don't think it's like totally mitigating to say, oh, just because of COVID, and if you was to write them off, then he could go down.
No,
the potential to go down. That's why he was in the league in the first place.
I mean, more with the financial difficulties as well, partnered with what's going on at the minute. So, because obviously they'll probably be struggling financially right now, that partnered with them going down, if they do go down.
That'd be a double whammy.
It would be a double whammy.
Everyone's in that situation, though, aren't they? I mean, there's more than just football clubs in that situation. The COVID are going to send them to the wall. I mean, unemployment's up by 50,000 after 1 week. It was up by 50,000 in the UK after 1 week of lockdown. You know what I mean? And, you know, the economy's crashed. Like, football clubs are going to go to the wall, just like every other business, unfortunately. And that's down to the way that it's been ran over the years, more than anything. You know, the way that the player contracts can't be furloughed because of the way that they've been written, obviously, you know, and the government shouldn't be paying fucking £400,000 or whatever. They get £2,500, in fact, wouldn't they, each football player, like, if they weren't able to be furloughed? So maybe that would have been a better option. Football does have to change, you're right, in that regard. Like, but, you know, it's not just for Premier League clubs. Like, the FFP question, as we come back to it, that doesn't even affect the likes of Doncaster. You know, the FFP is a Premier League model, isn't it? And whether the EFL have got their own, I'm not 100% sure. But, you know, as far as Bournemouth are concerned, yeah, that's a fucking double whammy, and that's our loss. Just like it's our loss, so every lad up and down the country who's lost a business or a job because of it, like.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's the thing for me. It's more the fact that, and this isn't football, this is everything as a whole, but when people are very quick to obviously say, like, football shouldn't come back, and you've got the null and void of saying that, you've got to remember that these football clubs are still businesses at the end of the day, and that's why people are so desperate for them to come back, because there is so much money involved, and it is a massive part of the economy with all the money involved in it and stuff. But that's going back to what I was saying before, that actually we're losing the game as we knew it. That, you know, there was so much money pumped into it, and maybe this will see, you know, things change, and maybe there'll be a maximum amount of money people can earn now. Maybe we'll see a whole restart of football and the lower transfer values of players, because players, clubs can no longer afford, you know, like your 200 millions on Neymar or whatever it was in the end, and however much United spent on Pogba and Maguire and stuff. We probably won't see that for a long time after this, and I don't think that'll be a bad thing at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I was thinking, like, the German model could be interesting, where, look, if teams are really struggling, do they just go, right, do it? Does anyone want to buy in ownership of this? You know what I mean? Like, would you be willing to spend £500 for a share in Liverpool? Like, wouldn't even, maybe not even a full share, but you know what I mean? Like, maybe that could be a thing where they'd just be like, let's get some extra dough in here. And I think a lot of people, I mean, they'd have to come with extra things, like you go higher up on a ticketing list or something like that. But I think that could be a really interesting model to go down. But yeah, there's a lot of, as much as this is a really dire time for a lot of clubs, I think Jack's right. This could be a place where a lot of good comes out of this, a lot of changes that need to be implemented. And it's just kind of getting their hands forced and going, well, you're going to have to do this, otherwise these clubs are going bust. These are going bust. We need to grow football from the bottom again. It could be really beneficial in like 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get on to Eddles before we go into our last viewer question of the day, and then before we go into our subscriber Q&A, get over to theredbentv.com to check that one out, where we'll answer loads more of your questions. Errol wanted to know, what's the best front three in the Prem era? Now, that's a fucking tough one, Errol.
No, do you know what it was? It was because I seen Give Me Sport, it was on my timeline the other day, Give Me Sport comes up and says, we've ranked the best front threes of the Prem era. I'm saying, okay, no-brainer. Well, I know what number one, two, and three are going to be. And one and two threw me. So I was a little bit pissed off with the final results on their website. So I just wanted to throw it to you guys to just see what you were
thinking. What was the number one? Was it Lacazette, Aubameyang, and Pepe?
Was it fucking no? It was Tevez, Rooney, and Ronaldo.
Ronaldo, yeah. From three, to be fair.
Go on, Chris, sorry.
I remember that as being like the first kind of front three around that time, you know what I mean? Because obviously before then it was like all 4-4-2s and stuff like that. So, what do you reckon it is, Tom? Go on.
Well, I didn't know what the question was, so I had a few like front threes, and then I picked my best front three of just three random players. But that United one came into my head. They had Nani as well, kind of assisting them. There was obviously Arsenal Invincibles, which was a four as well. It was Pires, Henri and Bergkamp with Ljungberg on the other side. But I feel like you can throw Mane, Firmino, Salah in there as one of the best front threes you'll ever see. Coutinho, even in there before he left, was unstoppable. That front four, I guess, we had at the time. There's a lot of fantastic ones. In terms of my all-time, and I know this is kind of weird, but I picked Aguero, Henri and Ronaldo as my best front three ever. And I figure I don't need to explain Henri and Ronaldo. I just don't need to explain them. The Aguero one, maybe, but I had a look. He's got 0.69 goals per game in the Premier League in 261 games, 34 of them were sub appearances. He is one of the best strikers in Premier League history. Done it over so many years, so many important goals. I feel like he's gonna kind of get a little bit forgotten about, but he's up there with like their front three is unreal as well. If you think about
what was on the list, to be fair, Sané, Sterling, and Aguero was on the list. I think they came in at like five or six.
That's unreal, lad, that front three. There's been so many over the years, but yeah, it's so hard because it depends like what year of football, sort of. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit wrong in that because Rooney, Ronaldo and Tevez could beat anyone.
What was the top three front threes, Errol?
Give me 2 seconds, I've still got it here on my phone, I should have. It was the top three, don't tell me it's gone now. So the number one was the Man U guys that I said, Rooney, Ronaldo and Tevez. The second one, we was number two. With Firmino, Mane and Salah. And then I can't remember who came in at number three. But we also had... Oh, yeah, number one was Carlos Tevez, Wayne Rooney. There's the other two. It doesn't say on that no more. But, yeah, we also had Suarez, Sturridge and Sterling. I think that was my personal favourite from three as well, to be fair.
What's yours then, Jack?
Okay, so number five was Iron Robin, Damien Duff and Didier Drogba.
I did like that one, you know. That was a good front three, that.
Raheem Sterling, Leroy Sané and Sergio Aguero were number four. It was, as what Tom said before, Robert Pires, Dennis Bergkamp and Thierry Henry. They came in at number three. And then it was our boys at number two. And then it was them up the M62 in number one.
Yeah, what do you reckon then, Jack? Who would you go for, mate?
It's interesting because I initially read the question like Tom did and it being obviously best front three from any team. But, you know, I think obviously as a 20-year-old, it's very easy for me to look at this current Liverpool side and say you don't get much better than that. I think the SAS was very good as well, obviously in 13-14. I think the City one deserves a mention with Sané, Sterling and Aguero. I think that was incredible. And right now, before we break their Centurion record, which we're going to do, obviously that's the front three that's got the most points in Premier League history and they deserve a massive, obviously. And
didn't they score over 100 goals?
Yeah, they did.
Back to back, yeah. So they're up there.
But for me, my favourite player in the Premier League of all time, non-Liverpool, is Thierry Henry. And you know, I think that Arsenal side, the invincible side, where you got Henry, Bergkamp and Pires. And I know it's not a traditional front three, but there were three players that just blew everyone away. And I think it's so difficult to do that invincible thing. And I know they drew a lot of games, but it is very, very difficult to do. And I just think purely due to Henry being in there, then there you go. But I also think I did the front three as it was, as I said, and I had exactly the same as Tom, where it was Henry, Aguero and Ronaldo, because as I say, I think Ronaldo in the Premier League, we didn't see the best Ronaldo, but we've seen what he's turned into now, and you know, he's one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? So all right then, well, I think, you know, I think it's a toss-up between the Liverpool and the Manchester United. One of them, I think, if you follow, was it Beasley on Twitter? He gives you the reasons why Liverpool's front three was better, I think, by every metric. So finally, nice and short on this one, gents. Shriji Srinivasan, apologies. I know you are a subscriber to the Redmen as well. Which moment in your football-watching life did you celebrate the most in or that stood out for you? The ones that do it for me was the later Rigi winner versus Everton, Mane's Champions League final against Madrid, and the 2 minutes between Murray and Aguero goals on the final day last year when I thought we might win the league. Tom, which goal, one goal, did you celebrate the most more than any other?
I can't give you one, so I'm going to give you three. Rigi versus I can't. Rigi versus Everton, I laughed for about 5 minutes. You were there with me. It's on a video that we did. Laughed for literally 5 minutes. I'm going to say the Champions League final, obviously, because I hugged everyone out the door at the pub that I was in. It was unbelievable. And then, obviously, I think it's got to be the Salah chip versus Man City in the Champions League when we beat them 2-1. Obviously, there's a video on me and Si. Gone mental on that, but it was just the utter relief knowing that we were going to probably get to the Champions League final again, and knowing that they were our biggest rivals there, just pipped it for me. That was such a good goal.
Okay, Errol.
Degsy,
Dortmund,
man.
Yeah, man.
Shout out Dejan.
Yeah, man. That was
at that point I was ready to just accept that was an amazing game of footy. Both teams gave it their all. Both teams left it all on the pitch. And then Degsy steps up like that. It was just unbelievable. And if not, then it would be the final last year as well, Origi's goal. I think because once at that point, it was like 80 minutes of just stretching and sweating. By the time he scored, I kind of just knew it was done. And a whole season was just, whew. Yeah, that was a nice moment as well.
Jack?
Yeah, the Origi one for Everton, for me, everyone says they celebrated it loads. I was just in utter shock. I stood there like, couldn't believe it for ages. Honestly, I'd stayed up for the Tyson Fury night the night before. I was knackered. It was a shit game of football. I was getting ready to walk out the pub and then that happened. And I was like, oh my, what has happened there? So, you know, it was a bit bizarre. But, you know, for the best moments, I have to say the Barcelona game, incredible. And the whole lead-up to Kiev was phenomenal for me. I think, obviously, you had the Man City games, which were incredible. And the one at Anfield, the atmosphere was superb. You have the Roma games, which was mad. And I think also the fact that when we got to Kiev, it was like our first Champions League final in a long time. We'd been miles off for years. And, you know, it was that moment sinking in that, you know, Liverpool Football Club are destined for greatness again. And you know, I hadn't had that feeling since I was a very little kid. We had it in 13, 14, but it was rudely snatched away from us. But I had it again in Kiev and it felt very good. And obviously, we know what happened there. The story writes itself. But then we had the amazing run up to the season when we won it as well. So there's so many. And this is the brilliant thing. There's so many being a Liverpool supporter. It's hard to say just one.
Coutinho against Man City as well. That was the other one I fought earlier today.
That was I remember celebrating that one. Yeah. Mine are mostly home goals, just because if you're in the cop and stuff. I think the Origi one, yeah, I think everybody's spoken about that. Degsy definitely has already been spoken about. I think randomly, it's like it's not even a goal, but it was Shevchenko missing the penalty. Yeah. In Istanbul, I've celebrated probably harder than anything else because I ended up on top of a statue after that game and all kinds of stuff in Concert Square. So I definitely celebrated that one pretty hard. Yeah.
Salah against Chelsea as well.
It's what?
Salah against Chelsea as well.
Yeah, there's loads, mate, isn't there? You know, there's absolutely tons. Like, I mean, some of the ones, you know, the Barcelona game that you mentioned, there's just...
Stevie G in the FA Cup as well.
Mane against Bayern Munich.
I went nuts for that one when I was a kid.
The whole of the 4-3 against Man City, that atmosphere was electric. That whole 90 minutes, forget about the goal.
Ox's first goal.
Bobby Firmino, was Bobby Firmino scored the second in the away game in the Champions League?
Yeah, he sat
Otamendi down. I mean, that was just pure stress relief. There's so many. Anyway, listen, that is the end of the podcast. Like the video, do that now. It does help us out. And while there's no football, we need as much help as possible. Don't forget to check out Errol on his new podcast as well. And, of course, Jack, where can they watch you, mate?
Redmen Academy. Lots of stuff at the minute on the Bundesliga youngsters and stuff. We're going to keep you up to date with all that.
Boss, thank you very much. See you next time. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.